Samantha, we are holding on Kuf Zayin Amud Beis, a bit past the middle of the Amud line, against Akina. Still in the middle of talking about, we talked about not standing by somebody's field so as not to give them an ayin hara, which in turn led to various other discussions of different brachos and the opposite, which in turn led into the discussion of the importance of a good breath. So now we're in the middle of that. Amalei Rabba L'Rava Bamari. Yeah, that would be breakfast. This is dinner. Amalei Rabba L'Rava Bamari. We have this in Rava Basra as well. Minahani Mili Da'amri Inshi. Where do we get, where is the source in Torah for this expression that people say, Shitin Rehiti Rohut, 60 runners ran, 60, that lav dafka means 60, literally, a lot of times the Gemara uses it as an indefinitely large number. Here, over here, Tosafot says it may have significance, dafka 60, because there's 60 days in each season. We said before there's 6 seasons of the year, Korah V'Chorim, Kayat V'Chorim, etc. So each one lasts about 60 days. And we're saying that a good breakfast protects you from the effects of heat and cold, so 60 in that sense. And yet even they couldn't catch up with a person who eats bread, who has a good meal, who has a good breakfast in the morning. Where do we get a source for that expression? And also, we have a related expression that Rabbanon say. Rashi brings that it's from a Gemara in Psachim, that says that Rabbi Akiva over there told this to his son, Rabbi Yeshua. Hashkim ve'echo b'kayis mifne'achama, wake up early and eat in the summer so that you avoid the effects of the heat, or v'chorif mifne'atzina, and in the winter so that you avoid the effects of the cold. So where is the source in Torah for this concept, that a good breakfast is healthy and then saves you from these kinds of things? On the life, so Rabbi Bamari tells him, just if you have a pasuk in Yeshaya that says, talking about in context, they're talking about the Yidden who come out of Galus, but more generally, they won't be hungry, they won't be thirsty, and the heat or the sun will not strike them and affect them. Which Marshall points out, the sun over here can also mean, you know how a lot of times a sunny day in the wintertime is actually a very cold day. So sharav is the heat, and shemesh is the cold that you feel in the winter when it's a clear day. So why lo yakim?
Why did
you
say that in
Yishaya? There's a pasuk in Yishaya.
So he knows it's related.
So he explains, but he explains, and again, in context, it's talking about the yidden coming out of Golos. But the fact that the pasuk phrases it that way, we can learn from it. Lo yakim shorav Hashemesh. Why are they not going to be stricken by the effect of the heat or the cold? Kivin de lo yirav v'lo yismo, because they're not hungry and not thirsty. In other words, because they had a good meal. So there's a source for it.
So how do we know it's breakfast as close to noon or evening?
So that's the thing. So Marashar explains that the Shemesh specifically over here refers to in early in the morning when it's a sun, when it's a winter's day and it's sunny, it's going to be a cold day for the end. Omalei, so Rabba tells him, so you're telling me based on a pasuk in Nevi'im, I can actually find you a better source in Chumash. A pasuk goes like this in Parashas Mishpatim. You'll serve Hashem your God. He will bless your bread and your water. So what does that mean? The serving Hashem is saying Shema and davening Shemin Esrei. Is after you daven zupas from melach the kitten shemaim. Then you have your bread with salt and your water. Then you have a good breakfast. And then after that, as the pasuk continues, I will remove sickness from among you, meaning that with that having the good breakfast after shacharis, it helps. Right, but we're saying, in other words, that the Ebishter is sort of advising you that this is the right way to go about your day.
Salt.
Don't have too much salt, you know. Pasmanach doesn't mean too much salt. I mean, in fact, some of the Acharonim bring that nowadays that bread is usually made with salt. Lav dafka, you should be using extra salt, yeah. Right.
Pasmanach means when you make mochi, you use melach.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you have to bread.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So now we're done with the digression on
Bimelach.
Yeah. Okay. Now we're done with the digression on health topics and Ayin Hara and all of that. Now we're going to go back to, we started this whole discussion by way of a number of statements on Dinim Mominus that came from Rabbi Yehuda. We had the dinim about what you're allowed to plant in a field if you made a deal to plant one instead of the other, about picking cress out of a field of flax, about the dinim of a tree that's standing by the near or on the border of a field, etc. And now going back to that, now more dinim that Rabbi Yehuda taught. Rabbi Yehuda told Rabbi Adja the surveyor. He was a professional surveyor. His job was to survey and measure land when people are dividing up inheritances, when people are buying and selling. Also, we find in Eruvin he would measure the tchumim. That was his job. He was a surveyor. So Rabbi Yehuda tells him, "Loi tzalza b'mishchasa. Don't be careless with the measuring. Make sure that you measure very precisely. Because even if you make even a little bit of a mistake, every little bit of land could conceivably use to plant garden saffron, which is very high quality. Karkum is saffron. Karkum. It's a spice. They use it in the Turkish. They use it nowadays in Indian cooking, whatever. It's a very expensive spice. And even a small plot of land can be used to plant it. So if you make a mistake on even a small amount of land, you've deprived somebody of what could have been a nice income."
But I mean, he was a professional.
That's the thing that Rabbi Yehuda is telling him. You have to be careful. Don't be careless.
You didn't know that.
I'll tell you actually something interesting that Rabbi Avraham Bar Chiya, one of the Rishonim, Rabbi Avraham Bar Chiya Hanasi, has an interesting point about this. He said, you know, we find in the Gemara that a number of mathematical constants, we have approximations for them in halakha. Pi, the diameter of a circle, the Gemara approximates as 3 in everything. And Sukkah, the diagonal, it's 3 1/7 approximately. The diagonal of a square, the Gemara approximates as 1.4. Really, it's the square root of 2. It's 1.414, whatever. It's, again, a little bit less. Rabbi Avraham Bar Chiya writes, when it comes to halacha, when it comes to things like, for example, dinim of Eruvin or Sukkah or what have you, go ahead. You can use those approximations. The Chacham allowed you to use them. I, they're not exact. I, it means your Sukkah might be a tiny bit too small or whatever. Doesn't matter. The Torah allows you to do it. When it comes to surveying karka, no such thing. You got to use the exact geometrical, the exact mathematical facts as they are known, as they are known in your. So that's the point. Rabbi Yehuda is telling Rabbi Adda, don't think you can get away with the approximations that are being used in other areas of halacha. And in fact, the Rambam writes on that, probably based on what Rabbi Avraham Bar Chiya. Yeah, I don't know, whatever they had, they had fractions, whatever, but whatever. The bottom line is that, the Rambam writes based on that, based on this Gemara, that a surveyor has to be very, very expert in the details of geometry.
Yeah,
okay, so that's what he's telling him. On the way, Rabbi Yehuda, a little of Adam Meshapha. Now Rabbi Yehuda tells the same of Adam, the surveyor, another game. Dalat Amas Dan Nigra. When you're measuring out, so you have an Anigra is a canal. So you have this large river that flows in the area. The people who have individual fields in that area dig out canals that go that they dig out canals throughout the whole valley over there to go to their individual fields. And the banks of these canals are left unplanted because you don't want plants to go and undermine and then break down and cause trouble with the canals. So they leave 4 amas. They leave 4 amas by the side of the canal. Now, when it comes to those 4 amas, zalzabuhu, be careless with them. What does that mean? So Rashi says it means be careless. In other words, they don't have to be 4 big amas. They can be. They don't quite have to be 4 amas.
They leave four amas
in each side to keep again, so the plants don't undermine the banks of it. So the roots of the plants don't dig into the soil. Yeah, they don't seed them, they don't plant them, whatever. So he's telling him, when you come to measure those 4 amas that Rashi explained, you don't, no, fakir, according to Rashi, no, on the contrary, be stingy, don't measure them. They don't have to be,
be generous to the field.
Be generous to the field owners, not to the
right.
4 amas. It doesn't have to necessarily be 4 full amas width. Tosfos says, on the contrary, no, that it means that, on the contrary, it means measure them as, it means measure them as 4 loose amas. You can have, we learned in you can have where the amas and tchachim are pressed tightly together. You can have they're a little looser. I'll make sure it's 4 loose amas, and it's 4 generous-sized amas, so that people can stand there comfortably. Tosfos also discusses
now,
that.
What is it? It's stingy or it's loose?
According to Rashi, it's stingy. According to Tosfos, it's loose. It's fine. And Tosfos also discusses that maybe 4 amas doesn't mean literally 4 amas of clear space on the side of the canal. Maybe it means including the width of the canal itself. You have 1 or 2 amas on the sides. Okay, whatever. Anyway, then he says, what about the space that's left by the banks of the larger river? That, don't measure it at all. That just guesstimate so that it looks like at least 4 amas. It needs to be at least 4 amas. So therefore, instead of bothering to measure it, make sure it looks like something that is at least 4 amas wide, which of necessity means it's going to be larger than that.
At minimum,
4 amas. Yeah. Rav Yehuda Tamei, Rav Yehuda is going according to his own shita. Rav Yehuda, Arba Amos Anigra Lufnei Anigra, because he says the four Amos that are next to the small canals belong to the people who use those canals. So therefore, in other words, Rashi says they're only individuals. They can be mochel. If you didn't leave four Amos, if it was four stingy Amos, fine, they can be mochel on that couple of inches. Danara Dekulei Alma, but the four Amos that are left by the banks of the river, that belongs to everybody. Everybody can't be mochel. Therefore, you got to make sure that's four generous-sized Amos. Another din in this connection, Machriz Rav Ami, Maloi Kasfi Nagdi Betrei Evre Nara Kutsu. Rav Ami made an announcement, the full width of the shoulders of the barge pullers on both sides of the river has to be chopped down. Meaning, if you have your trees reach so close to the river, now, we've talked about this before, back in the 6th Perek, that they're the ships they used in those days on rivers, generally were like barges. Right. They'd be pulled by animals, or in this case over here, we're talking about they'd be pulled by people. Now, the people who are pulling those boats, they have the rope over their shoulder. They don't walk upright, because then the force of the boat and of the thing would knock them into the water. They walk at sort of an angle away from the water. They walk kind of like this, pulling the rope.
Animals.
In this case, we're talking about people. So they would walk a little bit angled away from the water. So Rav Ami is saying you have to figure out how much space they need, how much space a person needs to walk at an angle like that, with their body at an angle like that. That space next to the river has to be left clear on both sides, so that these barge pullers can walk without getting
these
stuck in the trees.
On both sides of the
canal. On both sides, because like this, you could have sometimes they're pulling from one side and sometimes they're pulling from the other. Rav Nosson Bar Hoshia.
Do they use English traffic laws or American traffic laws?
No.
Right. We drive on the left.
Rav Nosson Bar Hoshia cut Shitzer Amza. Rav Nosson Bar Hoshia took that to an extreme. He cut down 16 Amos width of trees by the sides of such a river.
Wow.
Also, Alei B'nai Mashrunia, so the people of Mashrunia who these trees belong to, came, Dafnuhu, and beat him up. They were very upset with him. Yeah. Now, why? What happened? What went wrong over here? Who saw the Kirshas Shosaramim? Who saw the Kirshas Shosaramim? He figured it has to be 16 amos as the width of his defined width of the Kirshas Shosaramim. We're talking about it has to be available for the Rabim, therefore 16 amos. When we're saying over here kutsu that it has to be chopped down, it means it doesn't matter whose land it is, it has to be chopped down. It has to be chopped down. Based on the next piece of the Gemara, the Meiri explained, if the owner of the land of the Tamar Chacham, you have to warn him ahead of time, you're supposed to do it, and if not, then it has to be done, regardless. The barge pullers have to be able to come by. So Rav Nosson Bar Hoshia thought you need 16 full amos, and in this case, no, he was wrong. Belohi, that's not so. Hasam Be'in and Kulahai, when it comes to a regular Rosh Hashanah, yes, you need full 16 amos. Hacham Mishamam Tochei Ashlayim, who here the only reason is that they should be able to pull their ropes tight and be able to walk at an angle like that. Amtochei means to stretch, Ashlayim, their ropes. Therefore, Kimloi Nag Kasvi Nagdi Sagi, therefore it's good enough if the space there by the river is wide enough for them to walk at an angle like that and not have their shoulders bump into the tree.
How many amos?
Two amos maybe, I don't know, whatever.
That's a big difference.
Yes, that's the point. That's so these people of Mashrunya beat him up. They had a valid point, yeah. Okay.
Well, not
to beat him up, but they had reason to be upset at it.
Okay.
Another case in this connection, Rabba Bar Rav Huna Havale Hahu Abba Aguda Dinara. Rabba Bar Rav Huna had a forest by the banks of a river, one of these rivers that was used for barges. Umrle Nekut Mar. So the other Chachamim told him, you should cut down your trees. Amalahu, so he says to them, Kutsu Iloi V'tatoi, first let the people upstream and downstream cut down their trees. Vahadur Nekutana, and then I'll chop down mine. Now, the question is, how can you do that? How does Rabba Bar Rav Huna have the right to say that? You have a pasuk that says, Sanya, that says, we learn from that pasuk, first improve yourself and then improve others. How exactly we get that from the Loshen Iskoshishu? There's a few different explanations. Rashi on the pasuk over there says, Iskoshishu is Meloshen Hekish, making things equal. First make yourself equal and straight, and then go and then koshu, and then go make other people straight. The Rashbam in Bobasir explains Meloshen Kash, take away the scroll from between your own eyes or whatever, and then take it away from people. Whatever the point is, so what are you saying? Let other people do the right work on yourself first. Then I don't know. So what are you saying? Let the other people chop down their trees first, and then me? The answer is no. Hasam Abba debate Parzik Rufila Abba. In that case, the forests that are upstream and downstream of Rabba Bar Rav Huna's don't belong to a yid. They belong to Parzik, the Persian governor. Now he's not going to listen to the halacha and chop down his trees. Therefore, Rabba Bar Rav Huna says like this. Ikaitsu, if this Tauzik is going to be willing to chop down his trees for the public good, fine, Payisna, then okay, I'll chop down mine as well, and then the barge followers can do their job. The Eloi Kaitsu, but if this Tauzik is not willing to chop down his trees, am I Akuts? Why should I chop down mine? What good will it do? What good would it do for me to chop down mine if Tauzik doesn't do his?
No one's going to go down that road.
Because the Imam Tichilchu Ashlayu, if they have enough room as it is to be able to stretch out their ropes and to be able to go from one place to another, Mistagilahu, then good, they'll be able to go. The Iloila Mistagilahu. If not, anyway, they're not going to be able to go on this side. So what's going to happen? They're going to come to the part where Tauzik has his trees right up to the water. So what are they going to do? They're going to have to go on the other side of the river. What are they going to do then? In midstream, they're going to cross over to my side, to my part that I clear cut, to go for a little bit, and then they're still going to have to go across when they come to the next part of Tauzik. They're not going to bother. So therefore, obviously, in that case, there's no choice necessarily. And when it comes to that stretch of the river, where you have Tauzik, me, Tauzik, of necessity, they're going to have to go on the other side of the river and pull from there.
Isn't this a case of, you know, the Marshal Sedina? I mean, he's the governor. He wants his things done.
What do you mean? I mean, he didn't chop down the trees. Like, we're saying this is a matter of halacha. This is a matter of halacha. You have to allow the barge pullers to go. So therefore, the Tauzik is not going to listen to halacha. So therefore, Rabbi Bar Avuna is saying, in that case, there's no sense in cutting one area in the middle when they're anyway not going to be able to use it.
Of course.
Okay, that's all he's saying. That's all he's saying.
But he's a goy, this guy, right?
Fine. So what is he? So what's that got to do with anything?
Why should he listen to halacha? He's the governor.
If he realizes that, you know what, fine, but the fact of the matter is the poor guys who are pulling the barges have to be able to come by here. Let me be fair to them and cut down my trees. Good. If he does it, not as a matter of halacha, but as a matter of common decency, okay, then I'll do it as a matter of halacha. If he doesn't, then me doing it.
Privacy.
Yeah, whatever. So, continuing the story, Rabbi Bar Rav Nachman Havaka Ozo Ba'arba, one time Rabbi Bar Rav Nachman was traveling on a boat down this river, Chazar Hu Abba de Koya Guda Dinara, and he saw a forest there near the edge of the water. Amalahu Deman, so he asked the people, who does this forest belong to? Amrulay, Rabbi Bar Rav Huna. It belongs to Rabbi Bar Rav Huna. So Rabbi Bar Rav Nachman got very upset. Omar, and he used a Lashon HaPosuk from this, from Ezra, the context over there, was talking about how the leaders of the people were in Bava. But he's using a Lashon HaPosuk. The hand of the officers and princes was in this wrong first. They were talking about that they were intermarrying. Here we're not talking about that. But the point is, he's using the Lashon HaPosuk, like, look at this. Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, who's supposed to be the great Talmid Chacham and leader of the Jewish people, is disobeying the halacha. He didn't realize that the trees weren't chopped down. He didn't realize there's this whole business with Tauzik Rufila.
It's a continuation of
the previous story. Yes. Omalahu kutsu kutsu. So he tells the people the people on the boat, chop down over there, make room. Also, Rabbi Bar Rav Huna. So then later on, Rabbi Bar Rav Huna came. Ashkechei dekayis. He found the trees chopped down. Omar, and he was very upset.
So that you're not supposed to cut trees.
Wait. Omar, so Rabbi Bar Rav Huna said, Man katye, he said, like, very angrily, who cut these down? Tekutz anofe, let his branches be chopped off. Now, he didn't know it was Rabbi Bar Rav Huna. And Tosfos adds that also, and this is the same patch of forest that we were talking about before, where in the end, Lahalacha, he wasn't required to cut it down because it wasn't going to do any good. So therefore, now, what is Rabbi Bar Rav Nachman accusing him of being involved in doing an Aveiro when he didn't? So that's why he used such a sharp expression to kut and say those branches be chopped off.
Rabbi Bar Rav Nachman and Rabbi
Bar Rav Huna, yeah. Yeah, they're,
which one was the Rabbi that we have in Tanya?
Neither one. The Rabbi that we have in Tanya is Rabbi Bar Nachman. He's a contemporary of theirs, but it's a different one. Yeah. Amri, so they say, Kulu Shnid, Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, Le'ikayim Le'zara L'Rabbi Bar Rav Nachman. Throughout the rest of the lifetime of Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, none of Rabbi Bar Rav Nachman's children stayed alive. He said that his branches could be chopped off, and his klala, even though he didn't. So actually, it's a Ben Yehoyada act. I mean, just because the guy chopped down his trees, it deserves such a sharp klala. Okay, so that's the point of the Tosfos. Ben Yehoyada explains differently. He says, no, he didn't mean anything about children dying, Rahman al-Tlan. He meant, you chopped down my... Now he's speaking directly to Rabbi Bar Rav Nachman. He didn't know it was him. Whoever it was that did this, he chopped down my trees illegally. He deserves to have his tree chopped down illegally. The actual branches of his tree. But... His words had more effect than he meant to. The Sultan grabbed a hold of them because of the Talmud Chacham, and therefore, yeah.
Well, who said that?
Ben Yehoyada said that. Yeah.
That might be every time one of these klalos goes.
It could be.
Yes,
it might be
Rav and Shmuel.
Mm-hmm. Right. Sure. Yeah. Okay. more dinim from
Karna.
Yeah, more dinim from Rabbi Yehuda.
We shouldn't get angry.
It shows, yeah, we should be careful with what we say. Indeed. Okay, more dinim from Rabbi Yehuda. Hakola igli gafo. Everybody has to be involved in fixing the walls and the gates of the city, so to protect the city. Ba'afilumiya. Igli means, igli Rashi says means gate, and gafa means the wall. So igli gafa means the gates and the wall. Everybody is responsible to help out with that, to either in person or with their money. Ba'afilumiya. I mean, even such things are taken from Yisoyim. I mean, even though we don't usually assess Yisoyim for tzedakah or what have you, as we learned in Gittin, but here you do because they also need the same protection. Aber Rabbanan loy, but not from the Rabbanan, not from the Talmid Chacham. My time at Rabbanan loy tzrichin itirusa, because the Rabbanan do not need to be protected, the Torah protects them. Now, who do we mean by Talmid Chachamim in this connection? There was a bit of discussion among the Rishonim about this in Shulchan Aruch. And Shulchan Aruch is paskin that basically we need, it has to be somebody, first of all, who is recognized as a Talmud Chacham in his area. He doesn't have to be a world-class Talmud Chacham, but he has to at least be that in his area, he's recognized as a distinguished Talmud Chacham. And number two, that he's Torah Oseh U'Mnaseh, not to the extent of Reb Shimon Yochai, maybe, where he's learning 24-7, but at least that Amar says, even if he may have a business in order to earn enough to live off of, but then immediately, as soon as he's done with that, he goes back to learning. That's the definition of a Talmud Chacham, nothing else. That's the definition of a Talmud Chacham for this purpose. Lakaya de pas. Yeah. On the other hand, when it comes to paying for digging wells or pits for the water supply for the city, then vafilu mirabanan. Then you collect from that even for the Talmud Chacham, even from the Talmud Chacham. Because fine, you can't say they may not need the protection of the city walls and gates, but they need water to drink, right? In Bava Basra, this Gemara is also brought in Bava Basra. Rashi explains there that Karya de Pasya is different. It means something different. He says over there that it means smoothing out the roads, repaving the roads, making the marketplaces, whatever. Again, the Rabbanan need those kinds of things. So therefore, that comes even with Rabbanan.
Pasya is what?
So over here, Rashi explains that Pasya is the container that they use to drink, like the dipper. They would have by a public well over there, you'd have like a dipper, like a public cup that you could draw water with and take a drink. That's called Pasya. Okay. So that comes from Afilu Mirabam. However, however, that only applies if the people don't go out in a crowd on their own. In other words, you don't have... For this digging wells or whatever, you don't have the citizens themselves go start digging the wells. They hire people, so you have to pay those people. Fine, the Rabbanan have to pay their share of that also. But if it's the kind of place where the minhag hamakom is that the local people, citizens themselves are the ones who go and dig those wells, then no. The Rabbanan apostle, the Rabbanan lav v'nei mekra, because the Rabbanan are not expected to go out with these crowds and do work. It would be a gnai for them to be doing work in front of the public. Mefoshim discussed, does that mean that they're completely potter? Does it mean that instead they have to hire other people to do it instead of them? Okay, anyway. All right. Another din, Amar of Yehuda, Lakaya Denahara, when it comes to redigging out the river, so you have this big river, again, that supplies water to many different fields. After a while, it gets silted up or it starts getting naturally dammed up with silt and rocks and what have you. So every so often, you have to dig it out to keep the water flowing freely. Katoi Misai Iloi, the people downstream have to help out the ones upstream. So if you have a blockage upstream, the ones further downstream have to help clear it because it affects them also. If there's a blockage upstream, they're not going to get water. Iloi Iloi Misai Katoi, but the other way around, the people upstream don't have to help if there's a blockage downstream because it doesn't help them to clear out that blockage either, but they do better if there's a blockage, they have more water. The Chilufa, the Maya Dimitra. And then the reverse is true as far as the drains that drain away the rainwater. So you have, for example, Rashi describes, let's say, in a city where you need sewers to drain, you need storm sewers to drain away the water, otherwise it ruins the streets and everything. So they have Rashi describes they have a groove running downhill to make the water flow away. You can see in places like the old city of Yerushalayim, you can see in some of the old streets over there. Yeah, you have these little grooves running down the middle of the street there, and a number of places that's what they were for. Okay, I don't know. So there it's the other way around. The upstream people need to help the downstream people because if there's a blockage down there, it's going to back up by them, but not vice versa. Yeah. Tanya Nami Hochi, and indeed we learn in a braisa that says similar to that. Chomish Gines Hamistapkes Mayim Mimayanechad. If you have five gardens that all get a water supply from one particular fountain, from one particular source, yeah. Viniskalkala Mayan, and the source, the spring is wound and it gets silted up or whatever. Kula Mataknasim El Yoyna, all of them have to help out if the blockage is near the upstream one. Nimta Sadaktonim, Takanesim Kulanim Takanesfasma. So the one furthest downstream has to help wherever the blockage is, as well as when the blockage is in their area, no matter what, they're going to have to help. Because
so
regardless.
So you have the
spring is over here.
Right.
You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 all going downstream.
Right.
The guy over here, if there was a blockage anywhere, whether it's here or here or here or here or here, is going to have to help fix it up.
Downstream. Upstream.
Yeah, but on the other hand, let's say, for example, the guy over here, if there's a blockage over here, it's not his, he doesn't have to help. He doesn't gain from fixing a blockage over here. Abba. If he doesn't, more water will back up over here from the stream, and he'll have more water to water his fields. And the same way in reverse, if you have five chaseras that are all draining out their wastewater into one sewer, then the sewer gets damaged, so now the water is not draining properly. All of them have to help the one furthest downstream, the one closest to the exit, to fix. So there you have the other way around. The highest one is the one who's always going to have to help regardless, because wherever the blockage is, it's going to affect him. Straightforward.
They didn't want the blockage because it would flood the fields.
Because it'll flood the chatzer. No, so that's the difference. The first case we're talking about, where you have fields that need to be watered. So there you're better off having the water back up. Your field will be better watered. Within reason, obviously.
Right.
Yeah. But
downstream.
Yeah, but
there's going to be a problem.
Because then they're not going to have water. But when it comes to wastewater, it's the other way around. When it comes to wastewater, it's going to flood your chotzer or your house or your street or what have you. You want it to drain away.
Yeah.
All right. More dinim. Omer Shmuel. Haimand achzik v'raksa d'nava. If somebody makes a chazaka on the banks of the river. So we described before that you have the banks of the river where you have the banks of the river that were usually left empty so that plants and whatever over there don't undermine the banks of the river and make it collapse.
Underneath the bank itself.
No, not underneath. In other words, you have the river is here, the bank is over here. They would usually leave the bank, as we said before, 4 amos or whatever clear.
Right.
Now, so suppose somebody makes a chazaka on that area. So Rashi describes the situation was the many times you had pieces of karka that were ownerless. They were public property. No. We didn't say no. We said it's used by the government. That doesn't necessarily belong to them. It was public property. So Rashi describes it was public property. It was hefker for anybody who comes, as long as you pay the real estate taxes on it. So suppose you have, for example, an area over here, Rashi describes near the, not just by the banks, but like near the port, near where the ships need to unload. You need a large amount of space over there to unload cargo off the ships. Suppose somebody goes and makes a chazak over there. He wants to build a building over there, let's say, or plant a field over there. Mm-hmm. As long as he pays the land taxes, well, chatsifa habi, he's a chutzvedika person for doing that, because the place that's used by the rabbin. However, saluki lemasakinimai, however, we don't have a reason, mitzadadin, to remove him from there, to force him to vacate. Because the fact of the matter is, it doesn't belong to anybody specifically, and he is paying the land taxes on it.
He's got the right to deal.
Dina de machosa dina. If dina de machosa is that it's available for anybody that's available as long as
you.
Okay, well, that's what we're talking about. Since it's hefker and he's paying the land taxes for it, the real estate taxes, that's it. As far as dina de machosa is concerned, it belongs to him.
Taxes, how can you say it's hefker? It's not hefker.
It was hefker until he got a hold of it and said that I'm going to start paying the taxes, the land taxes on this plot of land, and I'm going to use it for myself.
That doesn't give him a right to build.
It's a chutzpah thing for him to do, but we don't have a legal ability to take him away. However, but nowadays things have changed. Dekokasvi parsoi, because nowadays Persians write when a person buys karka, knilachad maloy savri susyamaya, you acquire for yourself the land up into the river as deep as a horse can go, and the water will be up to its neck. Meaning, in other words, so Rashi explains like this. When you have a person who has once this thing came about, the way the way the Persians do this.
Right.
One second. The way the Persians started doing it, the local government started doing it like this. When a person buys land near the river, used to be that the rule was when they write out the deed was your stretch of land goes until here, and then you have the space between here and the river, which is Hefker, that doesn't belong to you. Nowadays, they're saying they started writing differently. You actually do own this land technically, all the way into the middle of the river, as far as a horse can go, and its head will still be above water. Meaning that at that point, the deal is sort of like nowadays when you buy a house. Implicitly, the sidewalk in front of it is included as well. You can't go build on the sidewalk, but in principle, that belongs to you. That's why they make you responsible for snow removal there, et cetera. But therefore, they are here, which is still responsible. So here the point was, Persian said, in a certain sense, it does actually belong to you. However, we're making you still say that because they need it to load and unload ships or whatever, you're not to build anything there. Well, on that basis, then, if somebody goes and now uses that
on this immediate bank to the river?
Yeah. So therefore, as far as not only the bank of the river, but also the first few feet within the river itself. Yeah. So therefore, on that basis, salukinami misakinimlay, then in that case, we can actually remove the person, because now if some other third party comes and starts building buildings or whatever here, fine, the owner of the neighboring property can tell him, this is actually my property. By law, it's mine. I'm not using it because it's near the river and I'm supposed to keep it empty. But it does actually belong to me. My deed says that I own it. Therefore, get out of here. That's the difference.
So the guy who owns the property just opposite that.
Here's the river in the middle over here.
Right.
The original agreement, and here's the river, here's the four islands. Here's the four islands, or whatever it is. The original thing was like this. A person who has a field here, let's say.
Where
the Hagar Tabas is. Originally, the deal was that his property line ends here.
Right.
From here till here is Hefker. And then here is the river. Well, since it's Hefker, if somebody wants to grab a hold of it and start paying the real estate taxes on it, fine, he had the ability to do that. Now we're saying the Persians changed the law, and they said, you who have a field over here, you actually own this as well. You actually own even into the middle of the river.
Right.
Therefore, we can throw them out because it really does belong to me, and I'm leaving it clear, and you're preventing that. Tosfos says the other way around, that actually what it is that we're saying now – Since the Persians made that new law that a person who owns the banks of the river also owns part of the river itself, therefore we have the ability to throw them out, because what's going to happen if somebody comes and builds over here? We're not saying, not like Rashi is saying, that this part actually belongs to him. No, if a person were to build here, what happens if he goes even further? What happens if he starts building into the river and literally preventing ships from passing by? Therefore, let's throw them out.
So who has that right? The city or the
according to the way Tosfos learns it, under the new law, the person who owns this land automatically owns this part of the river as well. Therefore, Tosfos is saying what the Gemara means is nowadays that's the law. If somebody starts building here, we will kick him out, because we don't want him to not only build over here but also to start building over here in the actual river and preventing ships from passing by. Okay,
who will kick him out?
Whoever's responsible for things locally. Another din, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Hay man de'achzik b'nei achi u'b'nei shutfi. Suppose that somebody makes a chazaka in land between brothers or between brothers or between shutfim. So Rashi understands that we're talking about, you have again a piece of Hefker land, which is between on one side and on another of it are fields that belong to two brothers or two partners. This guy went again and is machzik in that field and starts paying the taxes on it, so it becomes officially his. Chatzifa havi, again, he's a chutzpahdika person for saying that, because they might well have wanted to buy it in order that they should have adjacent fields or whatever. However, but we don't have the ability to throw him out or to evict him from it, because after all, it was Hefker and he took it over. There's different other explanations among Rishonim what exactly this situation is. There's another explanation that the Rambam says, for example, that it means if one of the brothers or one of the partners sold him this piece of land. So it's a chutzpah of him to go and buy it, because he's preventing the two of them from having adjacent. But yeah.
What about on a lake? We talk about a river, but what about
what applies to a lake.
If it's used for boating, I guess it's the same kind of thing. I don't know. Okay. Rav Nachman amar nami misakinan. Rav Nachman says, no, you can't actually evict him from such land. However, but if you're only trying to say that there's an issue of bimetzra, that look, I'm the adjoining property owner, I would have liked to buy this property so that I can enlarge my field, on that basis, loy misakinan. That's not a valid enough reason to evict him. Because, so Rashi says that what it means is Rav Nachman and also Rav Yehuda and also Rav Nachman are saying we don't hold the whole concept of bar mitzvah. We don't hold this whole concept, I have an adjacent field, therefore I have first right to buy the neighboring field. Many other Rishonim, Tosfos and many other Rishonim disagree with that. Of course there's an issue of bar mitzvah. It's a well-known thing. In fact, the next sugya is going to talk all about it. So rather, they explain that what it means is in this specific case, since, for example, over here, this was Hefker property. They could have equally well started paying the land taxes on it and taken it over. The fact that they didn't means that we're not going to apply by Metzra over here. But if it had been an ordinary case where, yes, one person has a field and another person is buying the neighboring field, yes, of course. Nahaudi Amri, the Chachamim of Nahaudi, said, no, even from the point of view of the Dinah Bar Metzra, we would remove him, even if that was the only issue. It's not two brothers, it's not two partners or whatever, but it's down, you took over property which is next to mine, which I would have liked to buy instead. Even there, we say that we evict him from there and pay him his money. Mishum Shenema, Vasisa Yoshev Atoy Be'enei Hashem, based on that the Pasuk says you should do what's just and what's right in the eyes of Hashem, meaning, in other words, basically Rashi says that it's kind of a matter of Zenan and Vazelei Chatzar. You could find other land to buy. Me, I'd have to want this piece because it'll allow me to have two adjacent fields where then I can make it all into one.
In a way.
No, so that's Zenan. I will gain Vazelei Chatzar. You won't lose out because instead of you buying this piece of property, buy some other piece of property. Take the same money and use that to buy, right, and use that to buy some other property. What?
We didn't take it.
So if we're talking about that it was Hefker land up until now, okay, it didn't occur to him.
Maybe he didn't have the money.
But up until now, where the land wasn't up for the taking, now that somebody is taking it, then he wants. Effectively, what it is as we're going to see in the sugya over here, when you apply the dinah by metzra, what actually happens is the person who bought the field, which you're going to now pay him and evict him and take it over, he is effectively considered your shliach. So fine, as long as there was no shliach over here, you didn't do anything. Now that it's available, now that there's a shliach, then you have the right to exercise your right. But by the way, there's a sicha in Chelek Yotes where the Rebbe analyzes in some detail that there appears to be a machlokes between Rashi and the Rambam about the mechanism of bar mitzvah. Is it basically Rashi, according to the Rebbe explains, Rashi learns that it's basically a requirement on the lekeach. You, the buyer, should be giving up this land to me, and then you'll take your money and go buy land someplace else. Whereas according to the Rambam, it's more of a general thing. It's not specific to the buyer. It's a more broad based thing that there has to be this vasita yoshavato. It comes into play later when we talk about selling it to a goy, for example. We're saying that the buyer becomes effectively a shliach of the bar mitzvah. So if he's a goy, then that's not relevant. But that's what the Rebbe explains. That's why, for example, when it comes to that din of selling it to a goy, that I'm going to reformulate the halacha a little bit differently than we'll see it in the Gemara over here. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So now we're going to get into the whole topic of bar mitzvah. That's going to take up all of the Gemara from here until the next Mishnah. So, first of all, also imrich bay, suppose that this person, who the potential buyer of the field, comes and asks advice from the neighbor, from the bar mitzvah. Amalei Ezel Ezbun, he asks him, should I go and buy it? But Amalei Zilzvoin, and the neighbor tells him, go ahead and buy it. So the question is, Tzorech l'mikne minei or loy? Do we need a kinyan in order to confirm that he's waived his right? Or maybe not. Once he said verbally, that's good enough. Ravina Omar loy Tzorech l'mikne minei. So Ravina says, you do not. Well, what do you mean? Chavta, he has rights. He has rights as a bar mitzvah.
Right.
Is he waiving them just by saying so, or do we need an actual kinyan? Not a kinyan on the actual chavta itself, a kinyan on the right. Do we need a kinyan? Do we need a kinyan
right
sudor, what have you? Yeah, that doesn't matter. Ravina amar loy tzarech l'mikne minei. Ravina says you do not need to make a kinyan. Once he said it, that's good enough. Now, how do you, I mean, sort of limikimine, the Chachamim of Nahauda said he does need to make a kinyan. If he didn't make a kinyan, he can say, Rashi says, Meshata Hayisi Bacha. I was fooling around with you because I figured like this. If I come and ask to buy it, then the other guy is going to figure, hey, I have a vested interest. I buy location. It's next to my other field, and he's going to jack up the price. So I figured, let me wait till you buy it, and then that way he'll sell it to you at a reasonable price, and I will consider you my agent, and therefore I'll end up getting it for a reasonable price. So therefore, I didn't make a kinyan. I'm still entitled to exercise my right.
Who is he going to buy?
Okay, so we have like Reuven is selling a field which is adjacent to Shimon.
Right.
We're saying that, so Levi comes and buys it. What we're saying is,
from Reuven.
What we're saying is that if Levi comes and asks Shimon, should I buy this field? So we're saying, if Shimon tells him, go ahead, but without making a kinyan, later on, Shimon has the ability to say, I didn't say go ahead, meaning you can go ahead and buy it and I waive my rights. I'm saying go ahead and buy it because that way I'll be able to buy it from you. I'll be able to consider you my shliach and give you the money and evict you, and it'll be for a reasonable price. Whereas if I had gone directly to Reuven and said, I want to buy the field, he would have jacked up the price.
He doesn't have to explicitly say that.
No, that's what we're saying.
That's assumed,
yeah. The hilchos of tzarich l'mikneminei, and the halacha is indeed that you need to make a kinyan for it to be valid. By the way, it does say in the Rambam brings his book Shulchan Aruch that this is all if you only asked him. If the neighbor actually comes and helps him after he bought the karka, do something with the land or whatever, then that's fine that he's moichel and then you don't need any kinyan. Okay. Well, now that we're saying that you need a kinyan for that to be valid, then what happens is if no kinyan was made, then what it means is if the price goes up or down, it's already considered to be in his reshus. Meaning, in other words, that let's say, for example, so again, no kinyan was made, so therefore he didn't waive his rights. He's making the other person effectively his shliach. So what happens, for example, the other guy bought it for 100. By the time the Bar Mitzvah wants to exercise his rights, it's now worth 200. We would say that it's considered as if he already bought it for 100 and appreciated in his reshus. He's not obligated to pay this other guy, the interloper, 200. All he's obligated to pay him is 100, the original purchase price. And vice versa, if it was worth 100 when he bought it, and now it went down to 50, same idea. We would still say you have to pay him the 100, the initial price, right? We'd consider it as if it was in his reshus all this time. Zaban b'mei of a shavim masen. What happens if the guy bought it, this interloper, bought it for 100, and really it's worth 200? Chazina. So then we have to look at the situation. If the seller would have been willing to sell it at the same discounted price of 100 to anybody, if the seller would have been willing to sell it at a cheaper price to anybody, then all the Bar Mitzvah has to do is give 100, and then he's allowed to take it because that's considered the legitimate purchase price of it. But if not, then he has to give him 200 in order to get it, because then what we assume is that the seller was only willing to give this particular person a discount, not everybody else. The real price of the field is 200. Therefore, if you want this field, you got to have 200. The other way around, Zoban Mamas and Rashav Yameya, what about the other way around if the buyer bought it for 200 and really the price is only worth 100, really the field is only worth 100? So, Sogumina, originally the Chachamim thought, Mati Omale Lekatoni Shtarticha Vlela Absi. They thought to say that the the Bar Mitzvah has the ability to say, look, you're effectively my Shliach, you were supposed to be my Shliach, I made you my Shliach only to do good for me, not to mess things up. In other words, therefore, we should consider the whole shlichus is
possible. Something 200 is worth 100.
That's worth 100, yeah, that's messing things up. You had no right to do that as my shliach. Therefore, the sale is invalid, and we start all over again. That's we thought to say that. However, my kshisha, the son of Rav Chisda, tells Rav Ashi, you should know that the Chachamim of Nahauda say in the name of Rav Nachman that there's no einah when it comes to cats. We've learned that concept before. Either because location, it can be worth more to somebody, or it's just exactly the cost of whatever it is. Whatever it is, ain't no ala kakaris, and therefore, even if he bought it at an inflated price, tough luck, basically. You want it, you got to pay that inflated price. okay, there is a possibility, Tosfos brings up elsewhere, the possibility that maybe even we say Eino Nala Kakos, maybe if it's sold at fully double the correct price, maybe we would say that's considered invalid. So in that case, we'd have to say, when we say here 200 and 100, we don't mean literally 200, we mean 199. Whatever. Okay.
Whatever is to say, it didn't mean Vini. Better choice next time.
Okay. Another case. Zabin le griva de Arab mitzah nichse. What happens if somebody went previously and sold a griva, which means a small area of land in the middle of his own property? So he has a field. He has a square field, let's say. He took one area of it and sold it to somebody else
within his field.
Now the question is. So there's two ways of looking at what the question is. One way of looking at it is, do we consider the neighbors of this field, do we consider them to be Bnei HaMetzer for this little spot over here? Because they would be Bnei HaMetzer for the field. No, there's no separation. We'll talk in a second. No, there's no physical separation, but wait, we'll see in a second. So there's two ways of looking at what the question is. One way of looking at it is, do we say, look, this whole field, if we consider that this is part of the whole general field, the neighbors are all, each one of them is a bar mitzvah to this field. Therefore, maybe l'chatchila they have the ability to say, this isn't a valid sale. If you're going to sell to anybody, sell to us. Or another way of looking at it is, do we say, fine, this sale, there's no question, is a valid sale. But if afterwards, let's say, the owner of the field, the owner of the larger field, plans to sell this or this or this parcel or whatever, do we say that this person can be considered a bar mitzvah for them, that he has equal rights to for a first purchase? So it depends. Chazidin, we have to look at the situation. Idis he is ziburis. If that plot of land that he sold separately in the middle of the field is idis or ziburis, relative to the rest of the field, zvine zvine, then it's a valid sale because then it has a name of its own. It can be a logical thing. A person wanted to buy davka a piece, the davka the idis part of the land, or davka the ziburis part because they'll get it cheaply. Whatever it is, you can say that's considered
idis or ziburis.
In other words, it has to be somehow different in quality than the rest of the field.
Right. And,
The Eloi Iarumi Komarim. But if not, it means he's just playing a trick. Which means, again, according to the first way of looking at it, it would mean that this sale is not fully considered a valid sale, even of this plot to begin with. The other Bnei HaMetzer have the right to say, you should have sold it to us first. We'll give you money and you leave and we'll take over this piece. Or it can mean that this part, fine, you can keep, no problem. But later on, if the owner of the larger field wants to sell this part, for example, we are the real Bnei HaMetzer. You're just here as an imposter. You only bought it in order to be a pretend Bnei HaMetzer.
So what can they do?
Therefore, they would be able to say, this piece, fine, you own legitimately. You keep this piece legitimately. But this piece, I have the first right to, you do not. You're not really a Ben Amesa. Further getting on this, Matana Lesba Mishum Dinidu Bar Mitzvah. If the person gave the field as a gift to somebody else, then there's no issue with Bar Mitzvah because he gave him the thing itself as a gift. Okay, we'll talk about Matan Torah soon, actually. However, if the giver of the gift wrote out that there's going to be achrayus, that if this field gets taken away from you, I will reimburse you, then there is a din bar mitzvah, because you don't do that through a gift. If he's doing that, it obviously means it's a sale disguised as a gift. So then the usual din bar mitzvah applies. Another case, macha kol nechas of la'achad. If somebody sold all of his fields to one person, so wherever his fields are, wherever they are, he's selling it to one person. And now, in one place, one ben hametzer comes in one place and objects. Left from the dinner to bametzer, there's no issue of bametzer over here, because we're saying the whole idea of bametzer over here is based on the idea of alsisa yoshev atoy. But in this case, if the person is selling all his fields, he obviously, Rashi says, he badly needs money. Therefore, you can't say that he should have to wait until somebody else is available till the bar mitzvah presses his claims. He has to sell very quickly. So therefore, you have one person buying. So therefore, it's a valid sale. There's different other explanations why bar mitzvah doesn't apply in this case. One is because another one is because the seller has the ability to say, I'd rather deal with one person rather than with a whole bunch of different buyers. So therefore, it's better for me. If I have one person who's willing to buy all my property, it's too much of a bother for me to have to sell one part to one person. And another way of looking at it is also the buyer may back out. Look, I want a package deal over here. If you're going to start breaking it down, then forget about it. Right. And then, Labailam or Rishonim, another din, if you go and sell the field back to the original owner, so you bought a field from Reuven, later on you're reselling the same field to him, again, let's go Mishum din in the Bar Mitzvah. One second. Sorry. So then there's no issue about Metzger. What if you're selling it to the original owner? That's Valsi Sayashavat Tari. No, that's what we're talking about. You originally bought this field 10 years ago from Reuven.
Right.
Now Reuven wants to buy it back.
Yeah. But in the meantime, the Jason owners changed.
Doesn't matter.
He's still considered there's no Bar Mitzvah?
There's no, we don't apply the rule of Bar Mitzvah over here because the original owner wants to buy this particular plot of land back. That's the best Valsi Sayashavat Tari. He should be able to have his own land back.
I agree.
Okay.
Adjacent.
It doesn't matter whether the adjacent owners are the same or not.
It doesn't matter.
Now, another din. Zaban me'akum bezabin la'akum. If you bought land from a goy or sold it to a goy, also less from a shum din bar mitzvah, then there's also no din bar mitzvah. Why not? Zaban me'akum. If you bought it from a goy, the reason is the seller does not have to do bar mitzvah. The buyer, rather. Da'amalei ari avrichil l'chami mitzvah. Because you can say, I did a great favor for you. I got rid of a lion from a dangerous neighbor from your borders. That's the greatest Valsi Sayashavat Tari. Okay, so the Torah says the Rosh asks, so what, he's not obligated to do another favor after that? And the answer is, since at the time he wasn't obligated to, because he's buying it from a guy, and it's necessary to finish the deal as soon as possible, once he's not obligated at the time, we're not going to obligate him later on. And Zabin Lakum, and if he sold the land to a guy, then we say there's no din bar mitzvah because Akum Lavade Lavade Valsi Sayashavat Tari, because a guy is not subject to the din of Valsi Sayashavat Tari. You can't make him take the payment and leave there and vacate the land. However, Shamuti Vade Mishamtinin, however, we do definitely put the seller in Cherem ad makabel alei kol oinse de otzele mechamasei, until he accepts on himself that he will pay for any onus that this goy causes him. Because he caused, and now this person has a neighbor who may be a hostile neighbor.
There was a case like that recently in Barapak. Someone was selling a house and wanted a yid, so gave him a very low price.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the first thing that he did is decide to go.
So actually, there's a Rishonim talk about a related issue. What about, here we're talking about Stami sold to a goy. Okay, so Tosfos points out there is an exception. If the goy is paying the same price as a yid would pay, then don't sell it to him. Better you should be selling it to another yid. Therefore, we're going to put you in cherem until you're willing to accept. If the goy is willing to offer a higher price, you're allowed to sell to him. However, the Rosh says on that, it's brought in tour, that that's only if it's Stam, okay, an ad hoc thing, you're selling it to a goy. But if you see the situation is, if an abonim see, for example, that the situation is that the goy dafka wants to buy in order to break up a Jewish neighborhood, like happened here in Crown Heights in the 60s, then even if the goy is offering more money, you're not allowed to sell to him.
That's
what we're talking about,
yeah.
Yeah, so here's the case also that I was mentioning before, that sicha, so that I'm formulating this din a little bit differently, that you have to arrange that the goy will follow the goy will be willing to follow the dinim of Bar Mitzvah in future times. In other words, again, it goes back to this idea is Valsi Sayashavat Tari basically a chiyuv on the buyer. In that case, it's not really relevant to the goy himself. He's not a subject of Valsi Sayashavat Tari. Or is it a more general thing, in which case it applies to the seller as well? So the seller has to make sure that in the future it's going to happen.
How can he make sure?
He arranges with the goy, pays him off, whatever it is. Okay. So that's what we're saying. Yeah. Okay. Mashkanta lespa mishum dinu de bar mitzvah. Suppose that the field was mortgaged, as we learned back in Ezer Neshech, so you borrowed money from somebody, and you gave him the field that he can use it for X number of years, and he'll use the payers of it, and at the end the loan will be paid off, or whatever the different permutations that we said over there. Now, suppose later on you want to sell the field to that lender, let it become his permanently, also lespa mishum dinu de bar mitzvah. There's no issue of bar mitzvah, because that lender himself, who now has the possession of the property, he himself is the greatest bar mitzvah. He himself is considered already a bar mitzvah because he has the possession of it at the moment. But he was Amar Rav Ashi, because in fact Rav Ashi says Amar li sovid of Masi Machasya, the elder to Menachachamim of Masi Machasya told me my mashkanta. Why do we call such an arrangement a mashkanta? The shchuna gabei, that he's considered the one who he's considered the neighbor of it. My nakamina, the dinner by metzra. It's relevant as far as the dinner by metzra. This that we're saying, when it comes to who is the closest neighbor of this field who should have the first right to buy it, the one who already has possession of it, beside the milva, he's the one who has the greatest, he's the one who's considered the greatest neighbor. Therefore, he has first right ahead of all the other neighbors.
He borrowed money?
Reuven borrowed money from Shimon.
Yeah.
Then Reuven says, I have a plot of land, which I'm going to give you, Shimon. You are not going to have the land itself, but you're going to have the use of it for X number of years. You'll be able to have the payers of it. We'll deduct a certain amount from the loan per year for it, to pay off the loan, as we talked about the different permutations of it, Nezu and Nesha. At the end of it, I'll get the land back or whatever. We have cases over there where you sell it at the end of that. If this Malva, Shimon, wants to actually buy that land, he has first rights on it. Because he's already considered the closest neighbor of it by virtue of the
Mashiach.
No, if he wants to buy it. Obviously, if he doesn't want to buy it, it goes back to Reuven eventually. Okay. We'll continue with these dinim tomorrow, Beth Hashem, but real quick, you were mentioning about Matan Torah in connection with the Matana. So yeah, there is a very famous thing that's brought in a number of Sfarim, that the argument between Moshe Rabbeinu and the Malachim about should the Torah be given here on earth or should it stay up in Shemayim was an issue of Bar Mitzvah. And therefore, so what was the answer? So different proportions give a wide variety of answers, including that it was a matana, that it was an inheritance, because we're the children of Hashem, and many other different answers. The Rebbe talks about this in a Sicha, in Chelet Yudchet for Shavuos, and says these are all good answers, but the problem is, if you look at the actual Gemara that tells about the back and forth between Moshe and the Malachim, none of that really seems to fit. Moshe tells the Malachim, look, the Torah is obviously addressed to people who live here on earth, people who are parents, people who are in Mitzrayim, people who have a Yetzirah, and so forth, and you, Malachim, have none of those things. So what would that have to do with whether it's a gift or whether the Jewish people are Shem's children or whatever? So the Rebbe explains, based on something that we're going to have further down near the end of this discussion about Metzra, we're going to have a din that if you have two people who want to buy the land, one to plant it, one to cultivate it, and one to build a house there, the one who wants to build a house has first right. So therefore, what do you have then? We are, because building houses is more important. It's better that there should be places to live. Therefore, since we're receiving the Torah in order to make a dwelling place for Hashem down here on earth, and we, rather than the Malachim, are the ones who can truly do that, because we're the Tachtonim, therefore we preempt them in getting the Torah. We're more the B'nai Metzra than they are.
Because
we're the only ones who can actually build that house, whereas all they can do is cultivate it as a field.
Right. Yeah.